Welcome to Fries on the Farm, episode 238. I am Donovan, and with me is Roy.
Oh, man, I just flew back from Philadelphia, and boy, are my arms tired.
So bad, dude. Yeah. Well, welcome back. You you flew out Monday, came back Wednesday. Where'd you go? Yeah,
it's a work trip. There's a shop out there that's fabricating something for my work. So I've been going out there and doing some inspections and stuff. You know, it's not all that interesting. But on my way back, my layover was in St. Louis, and I was able to catch the entire Padres game today.
I saw the tweet. I guess Michael King did his part. I didn't get a chance. I didn't see anything about the game. It started at 10. That's when I really have to get busy at work. I've kept waiting for my phone to kind of buzz for maybe a hit, maybe a run scored. It never happened. And then finally after work, I'm like, oh, damn.
Yeah, it was, man, he was dealing. But the Padres couldn't hit the other guy. And then finally, they got a couple of hits, didn't do anything. And then there was an inning where Manny got on, and then there was a double play right after that. And then Jackson Merrill hit a triple, and he's standing there 90 feet away. And it's like, okay, finally going to score a run.
Right.
Didn't happen. And then the next inning, Matthew Batten hit a triple. And that didn't happen. It was the first time in Padres history that two players hit their first triple in the same game, their first career triple.
Wow, that's interesting. And glad to see Batten back up, man. That's we're going to talk about that here in a second. But great. And the funny thing is, all I saw was an effing Padres from Liddy. She was home today.
You know, that's the narrative. Everybody's like, oh, this, here we go again. They can't just get anybody in. They've been playing like a different ball team for the last, you know, most of this season.
Yeah.
They've been passing the baton. They've been taking what's given them. They've been taking advantage of mistakes. They've been getting runners in. Today was that day that they couldn't score any runs, but they took two out of three from the Brewers, who are probably a playoff team. They just took two out of three from the Dodgers. They're definitely a playoff team. So, You know, as I was driving home, Scraby was on the radio, and he said something about how Padres fans are watching games like they're NFL playoff games right now. Yeah. And that kind of makes sense. You can't live and die with every win and loss. You know, they won the series.
Yeah.
So losing a tight game, look at the bright side. Michael King was absolutely dealing out there.
Yeah.
He was unhittable.
Yeah. That's what I took away from it.
Yeah. And he was being efficient too. It was like the fifth inning, and he was only at like 50 pitches. So he could have gone the distance if he kept going at that rate of efficiency. There's definitely great things to pull out of that game.
Absolutely. And those games are happening, and more of those games are going to happen where you're going to get an absolute stunning performance from a starting pitcher, and they're going to get one or two runs. And it's just, that's the way baseball works. I was more glad that King continues to do well. I still have, you know, I still have a of like, not sure about that guy. Just that remnant of, we're not going to be good this year. Kind of like Michael King. I haven't seen him. He doesn't throw 96, but he deals. And that's what's more important than throwing hard. But I still have that. God, you know, is he good? I know he's good, but that's just my whole PTSD of being a Padre fan.
I don't know. I'm trying to find some information real quick on his velocity. Now, his four seam is 95.
Okay.
Average is 95 miles an hour. So he is a power pitcher, and he's got that slider that starts off at the batter's hip and dives to the far end of the zone. He's got a nice changeup, and he's got the whole package. It's a matter of is the command there? Is the control there? It's kind of like when the Padres had Cashner and Ross back in the day. Like the stuff is nasty, and when they're clicking, they're really, really good. And so who are you going to get today? Is the first game he walked seven guys. That's not him. That's the most guys he's ever walked in one game. Anyway, our agenda today, we've got our Major League Minute, which we already started breaking into.
Right.
We got some MILB news, and then we've got our remodeled affiliate rundown. But first, Donovan, why don't you hit us with a shameless plug?
Pick up, pick up, pick. Remix. Hey, you guys, God, it's so bad. Anyways, go to Apple, subscribe, give us a review, go to YouTube. We're on YouTube. This is going to be on YouTube. We're going to Elsinore this weekend. We're going to have an interview from our Elsinore. We're going to put that up on the YouTube channel. Go out there, subscribe, follow us on X, on Instagram, on Threads. I've been posting a little bit more on Threads. it's hard. I'm still stuck on X and Instagram, but I'm starting to post a little more on Threads. And we have merch. We've had merch for a real long time. We did the, you know, we did the fundraising with players, and I don't think we're going to do that this year, but certainly we have merch. I'll put the website and the link to it in the episode description. It's on T-Chip. Look for Friars on the Farm. It's cool stuff. I put shoes on there, a hoodie, a wallet, a ball cap, and obviously a shirt and a sweater, a sweatshirt that is. Says Friars on the Farm, and I got the other one with the full. My background is also on some of the shirts there. Go check it out. It's super cheap, and help us out.
Yeah, that background was designed by Tony Lasoya, right? He drew that.
Yeah.
So shout out to Tony. I know we haven't brought that up in a while. I stare at that background every time I talk to you, but he did a good job putting that together for us.
And it's okay, worked. And it's worked. You know, for so long we've had to change it once. When we first got it, we had the missions, and then we went to Amarillo, and then we got then the whole jumbling up of minor league baseball and the contraction, we got rid of up north, the Tri-Cities. So we've had a couple iterations of it.
Yeah, but those logos keep coming out of the corn, like those dead baseball players. All right, so back to the Major League Minute. We do have some transactions to talk about. Pedro Avila was designated for assignment. I was sad to see that. I get it, I guess. Yeah. And it turns out that they traded him to the Guardians for cash. They must have claimed him on waivers, and they worked out the deal, get cash considerations. I love that old 90s Fleer baseball card picture of the guy with the bling. It's kind of a meme that's going around. I always love posting that when I see somebody traded for cash considerations. But Adrian Morejon was recalled. And Adrian has been very good in El Paso this year. He's been pretty good so far in his appearances with the big league club.
Yeah.
The timing, though, so Avila gets DFA'd, and then a couple days later, we find out that Yu Darvish is hitting the IL with some sort of a neck thing, so they brought up Logan Gillespie. Now, I mean, we don't know Logan Gillespie personally because we haven't seen him, but he's been with Baltimore. He came up with Milwaukee, but he made it to the majors with Baltimore. And he was also part of the Boston organization for a little period of time. So he's got lots of experience. Doesn't look like he's been doing any starting. He's looks like more of a reliever. So yeah. I'm curious what happens next time Darvish's spot in the order comes up, if there's another transaction that happens, or if it's a bullpen day, or how they do that. And then finally, Matthew Batten was recalled by the Padres. Brett Sullivan was optioned down to El Paso. I like Sullivan. I like the flexibility that gives, because that can let you pinch hit on a day that Higashioka is starving.
Yeah, and you have a left-handed bat too, yeah.
But I think this has more to do with – so Cronenworth is apparently dealing with some sort of a calf something or other, a calf strain, a calf cramp, a calf something, calf tightness, whatever they want to call it. But they're not putting him on the IL yet. But now Matthew Batten started today's game at first base. He's got plenty of experience at first base. Sullivan, he can play first base, but he's not the caliber of defender that you get with Matthew Batten. And by the way, he made one really good defensive play in today's game when we were still on no-hitter watch keeping that no-hitter alive. So glad to see Matthew Batten back, your friend of the podcast, and you're one of those feel-good stories. I always like those kinds of guys that their jersey always gets dirty and they do whatever the team asks, play anywhere, do anything.
And teams need that. Teams need the guy that knows his role, comes up. I saw the tweet from Adam Klug. He's a program director at 97.3 The Fan. It shouldn't be overlooked in the defense of Matthew Batten. But I want to go back to Pedro Avila because we hear it all the time, cash considerations. What does that mean? Does that money, so can we use that on payroll? Is that going to go against you hear it when you hear the international money, obviously that's what that's for, but like the cash consideration. So we just get a couple hundred grand or, whatever minor league minimum, major league minimum.
I don't even think it's major league minimum at that point. But I don't know. Is it 50 grand? Is it, enough? Is it a gift card to Dick's Sporting Goods so they can go buy a treadmill? I don't know.
Frequent flyer miles or something like that, or an upgrade.
Yeah. Pack of Chipotle cards for the whole team. Here you go.
I'm going to investigate that, find out what the heck cash considerations. And you know, we, for, you know, he just never really kind of, after he came up a couple of years back and had that start at a double A and he was pitching really well. He just kind of never really put it together. And two or three games ago is what really kind of sealed his fate. He came in after Darvish kind of struggled, and where I think I tweeted there was a magnet in the front of home plate for the Padres because every ball just bounced right in front of the plate. And he was even worse than Darvish. And it just kind of snowballed from there. But you know, that happens. That's part of baseball.
That's true. Yeah. I saw that game where he was just spiking everything way in front of the plate. But that's the same guy that we saw in Lake Elsinore, he'd be electric for an inning and then he'd go out and the command was gone. But I still think that there is a promising pitcher in Pedro Avila. I think he can be a major league starting pitcher. He handled his role well out of the bullpen when he was called on to do that. So I was a little surprised that they moved him. He's out of options. That might have been part of it, that they want to be able to shuttle guys, and they didn't have the roster space to be able to do that. Because Stephen Kolek's a Rule 5 guy. You look at the rest of the guys on the roster, are they going to option Johnny Brito? They seem to want to keep him up.
Yeah.
So he seems to keep wanting
to stay up.
Well, yeah, you watch him pitch and it's like the stuff is really good.
Yeah.
And it's like he's one adjustment away from being the guy that he was last year. He was really good with the Yankees last year.
Yeah.
So you got to give somebody a little bit of a leash when it's early in the season.
Yeah, absolutely. So, okay, one more story for the Major League Minute or Five, we're going to start calling it. The Jackson Steal the Show, the two top prospects combined for history. This is by Adam McCavely. Jackson Chourio of the Brewers and the Padres' Jackson Merrill, both 20-year-old rookies, made some history on Monday night. Chourio and Merrill became the fourth pair of 20-year-olds or younger since 1920 when RBI became an official stat, each with multiple hits and multiple RBIs in the same game. They joined Tony Horton, both of the Red Sox on August 21st, back in 1965. Veda Pinson, Reds, and Ron Fairley, Dodgers on May 18th, 1959. Harmon Killebrew of the Washington Senators and Cleet Boyer of the Kansas City A's back in 1955. So that's some weird company and that's some old company, but certainly...
It's some great company. I mean, there's some really good ball players in there. Tony Conigliaro was supposed to be like the next hot thing when he came up. I think an injury, I think he got hit in the face by a pitch and it affected his vision and he was never the same. But Veda Pinson was a really good player and Harmon Killebrew. I mean, some people say that he's the logo, the MLB logo was modeled after him. I'm pretty sure he's got a statue at Target Field up there in Minnesota.
And Cleet Boyer, like what a better baseball name? Cleet. Grab a bat, you know.
Cleet, isn't that what I put on my feet?
Is that short for Cletus? We don't know.
Yeah, right. So a pair of 20-year-olds with just multiple hits in the same game last happened on April 18th, 2019, when Fernando Tatis Jr. of the Padres and Juan Soto of the Nationals did it.
Yeah.
So kind of fun little full circle there.
A lot of full circle. I see, and here's the thing. I don't know why there's so much hate about Soto right now. All the Padre fans are just going, oh, look, Soto, he did this. He does, you know, he did what he was supposed to do when he did it here. If the team would have went to the playoffs, I think there would have been a lot more love. I think the underperforming of the team really exacerbated, you know, his struggles at the plate sometimes. And then, you know, always digging for that walk. And what were you saying last episode you're talking about all the Yankee fans are going
about that now. Yeah, like, oh, look at him. He's trying to get a walk when really we need a base hit to knock in a runner. And that's just part of his game. That's who he is. He's happy to take that walk. He gets the shuffle going. But yeah, he got off to a slow start. He slumped when he got here. And it's always hard when somebody plays with one organization their whole career and then that first trade knocks them for a whole psychological, emotional loop. So I get that.
Yeah.
And then this year or last year, he got off to a slow start. And then after like May, something clicked in May. And after that, he went off. But because of that bad first month and a half, the numbers never quite look the same. Right. But then you look at the end at the wins against replacement and all that kind of stuff. He was right up there with the league leaders in all those categories.
Yeah.
I think people are just salty that they wanted to keep him and there was no way that the Padres were going to keep him long term. So it made sense that they trade him. And what did they trade him for? Four pitchers and a catcher.
Yeah.
One of them starting right now. We've got, you know, I do that trade again. And yeah. As much as right now we're looking back at the first Juan Soto trade, because James Wood is knocking on the door. He's pounding the door down in Rochester right now. Mackenzie Gore is looking really good. CJ Abrams is starting to look like the guy that we thought he was going to be. But you have revisionist history. Hindsight's always 20/20, that kind of stuff. You had an MVP caliber hitter, one of the best hitters in baseball for a year and a half. He helped take us to the playoffs one time.
Right.
It's not all his fault that the Padres didn't go to the playoffs last year. It was a whole collective. Who knows what the heck happened? I don't think you undo that trade. And then I don't undo the trade to the Yankees.
No, absolutely not.
But people can always look at stuff and find something to complain about. Right now, the hot topic is Xander Bogaerts. I saw somebody's talking about attaching Ethan Salas to Xander Bogaerts to dump the Bogaerts contract. I'm like, oh my God, you need to be just locked up and put in a rubber room somewhere for just even saying that.
Take it easy, right?
And Bogaerts was good last year. He had his slumps, but he was good last year. Yeah. And right now he's in a bit of a slump, but what's to say that 2 weeks from now, he'll figure something out, and then he'll go off for the rest of the season.
He will. And like we always say, the numbers will be there, and he'll come up, when we absolutely need him. So just back off. I don't know who I'm talking to about that. But let's move on.
Okay.
All right. So, hey, in minor league news, there's a new group buying up all these minor league teams at a feverish pace. What is the end game? So this is by Chad Jennings, Evan Drellick, and Sam Blum. Sam Blum, we've had on. Talk about the sticky ball that they were using in Double A with the Trash Pandas.
Yeah, this was in The Athletic, right?
Yeah. He covers the Angels. Okay, so at the center of this transformation is Diamond Baseball Holdings, a 3-year-old company that owns more than a quarter of all the minor league clubs. From a ground-up franchise in Spartan, South Carolina, to long-established clubs in Louisville, Kentucky, and Lansing, Michigan, Lansing Lugnuts, to their most recent purchase of the Harrisburg Senators in Pennsylvania, Diamond Baseball Holdings, DBH, now owns 32 of 120 affiliates, and its founders say they are still aggressively in acquisition mode.
They do not own any Padres affiliates at this time.
No, they do not. We are agnostic to geography. We are agnostic to club affiliation, Executive Chairman Pat Battle said. If you're one of the 120, we're interested. Now, the DBH portfolio has grown at a rate and to a size that would have been impossible 5 years ago. It is a byproduct of Major League Baseball's 2020 takeover of the minor leagues, which they yanked affiliated baseball out of more than 40 communities and shifted minor league control to the major league office. Commissioner Rob Ramford's One Baseball initiative seeks to put every aspect of the game under one umbrella, that of the major league team's owners, from Yankee Stadium to the Little League World Series and all things in between. Now, we've talked about this a couple, I think last year, that One Baseball came up.
Yeah. And, you know, when we were talking before we recorded, something kind of clicked to me that, okay, so baseball has this antitrust exemption that they've got through the government, and it's being questioned. It comes up every few years. There's a lawsuit that comes up and somebody's trying to challenge this antitrust exemption. And it seems like they're just kind of taking that antitrust exemption and just dangling it in front of everybody's face like, we're going to just keep on going until we have our fingers in everything.
Well, it's, you know, talking about the Little League World Series, they already, you know, they're already partnership with the partner leagues. You have the Perfect Game, you have the Area Code Games. All those are partnered with Major League Baseball. And I'm not sure, but I wouldn't be surprised if someday soon that they purchase those entities and kind of put Little League from travel ball, high end travel ball, to Little League Baseball under the MLB umbrella. Which I see is just extreme monopoly. And
it's all about money. Yeah. It's all about money and control. And that's kind of what makes me feel sad. Yeah. I was talking to somebody yesterday about, you know, when I was growing up, the equipment, like the coach would have the duffel bag, the GI olive drab duffel bag that he'd dump out, and there's all the bats and helmets that everybody would use. And maybe this kid had his own bat, or
ears broke.
But now you go to a youth baseball field, 8-year-olds, and they all have their own backpack with two bats. They have their own helmet. They have the elbow pad and the ankle guard and the sliding shorts and all this stuff. And it's money, but it's money that's driving all this. It's way more expensive to participate in youth baseball now than it was 20 years ago. It's way more expensive to buy the equipment. And then there's all the coaching and the travel ball and all this other stuff. So with minor league baseball, so when you have competing owners, they have their own incentive to set prices where they think is fair, you know, for merchandise and for food and for all of that kind of stuff. But if you've got one company that owns, what is this, 40, 50 different minor league affiliates, they can kind of, they can pool their purchasing across all of them. They can, you know, as with food and beverage and sanitation and all that kind of stuff. And they can kind of control their costs a little bit more and wind up driving the dollar up. And you know, that it only makes baseball less accessible.
Yeah. And they're talking about it here. I'm not sure if I put it in this, but they talked about they buy everything in bulk. They bought a bunch of video screens in bulk. They bought LED lights in bulk so they could put those in all their affiliates. And you save a little bit of money that way. But here it is. In the middle of the plan is DBH, co-founder by former college sports licensing executive Battle and longtime minor league owner Peter Freund, and financially backed by private equity investment firm Silver Lake.
There you go. So why would a private equity investment firm be involved in this? It's because they're trying to turn this into a profit cash cow.
Right. Beyond its ownership role, DBH has a strategic partnership with MLB to help negotiate national sponsorships and branding opportunities on behalf of all minor league franchises. And it also plays a role in consumer product licensing for all 120 teams. They think they can be a little more efficient, and maybe they can, one former owner said. But again, MLB is very local. You kind of need the people you need there to sell and all the stuff that has to be done on the ground. They can't do that corporately.
So at the minor league winter meetings, they have the trade show. And that's the opportunity for owners to see different products from different companies. So you go down there and here's a company that specializes in socks. And here's a company that makes goofy foam fingers and all of that kind of stuff. Even that, you get less diversity because now you're going to go, whether you're going to the Woo Socks or you're going to the Lansing Lugnuts, you're going to see the same line of products on the wall. It's just going to be specialized to that team where you don't have the opportunities for smaller businesses to come in and get a foothold on that marketing opportunity.
Yeah. On the one hand, it's tremendously beneficial that DBH has a say because MLB can't come in and push around 120 teams. One longtime minor league owner who, like some peers interviewed for this story, was granted anonymity so he could speak freely. Excuse me. However, the biggest fear is that they have is that as we approach the next minor league contract in several years, DBH has such influence and the teams themselves are just a small part of DBH/Silver Lake's overall involvement that it's conceivable MLB could hurt the minor league teams to benefit other areas. Yeah. Whether you're a DBH team or not, you're all in this together. We're all in this together. And we do believe a rising tide lifts all boats. If a non-DBH team has success, it's great for minor league baseball. And we celebrate that, Battle said.
But what if the next round of development partnership contract renewals comes up and they're talking about putting another 20 or 40 teams on the chopping block?
Yeah.
You know, that makes it a lot easier to pick out, okay, here's the wheat and that's the chaff. And okay, this company over here that owns 80 teams, those 80 teams are going to be safe. It's these other mom and pop operated ones that are going to get the axe. And that sucks.
Yeah. So here's what they do. So after taking over a team, the DBH playbook typically involves minimal surface level changes, except in case like Hudson Valley, where Heritage Financial Park needed significant renovations to meet the new facility standards. When DBH recently purchased the Winston-Salem Dash and Inland Empire 66ers, each news release stated that all existing staff would remain with the teams. So that's good. That's been the norm. DBH has never replaced a general manager upon acquisition. Two of its teams have rebranded, each one dropping the name of its major league affiliate in favor of something more local. And DBH announced plans to relocate two franchises, the Down East Wood Ducks, which have a cool duck as the logo, and will play out of the 2024 in Kingston, North Carolina, and then uproot to Spartanburg, South Carolina. And then the Mississippi Braves will move to Columbus, Georgia.
Okay, so the part about where they're doing minimal surface level changes,
yeah,
and they're only doing the changes that are being mandated by Major League Baseball,
right?
That are required. Like, your facility is substandard, you're scoring below what we need on that, you know, that whatever that evaluation checklist that they've got, and so they're not investing money. That's what they're saying right there, is they're not investing money in the team. They're just coming in as an equity partner and backing, you know. And then, okay, they haven't replaced a general manager upon acquisition, but okay, so the first year the guy is safe, but then after that they're going to chop him and bring in their own person. And then the rest of the staff, these are local people. It's not like you're right. Going to be flying in. I mean, maybe you bring in people at the VP level or the CEO, CFO, you know, your top management. But the people that are running all your food stands, the people that are managing your merchandise booth, those are going to be local people.
Yeah.
So yeah. You're not going to come in and replace them with new people from out of town, because that costs money again.
Yeah. I don't know. Upon reading this article a little bit more, and I didn't put more than what I just read in it. I kind of like the idea, you know, it's the bad thing, because the mom and pop days of minor league baseball are kind of over, particularly after the slashing to the 120 teams, where it's millionaires complaining, you know, arguing with millionaires. And then at the major league level, it's billionaires, you know, complaining about billionaires. Having that money gives, I think, a little more foundation where, you know, they don't have to raise prices, you know, or maybe that having that financial backing, they could do the renovations that these fields need, and instead of raising ticket prices, where that stuff doesn't cost the consumer, which hurts the local economy, which hurts the attendance. So reading it, I was trying to look for the bad parts in it, other than, you know, someone with a lot of money coming in and buying up a lot of teams, where that, you know, you can see that as a bad thing. But having that financial backing, I think, could be a good thing. It's yet to be determined, but we'll continue to follow the story as it goes. And certainly if one of these teams, you know, if they pick up one of the Padres affiliates, we'll definitely be more in on that.
Right. So the Missions recently got sold a couple of years ago, and the new ownership group, and you've got former Major League Baseball players that are Texans. You've got Craig Biggio involved, and you've got Roger Clemens. And then they've got a couple of guys from right there in San Antonio, David Roberts. Was it David Robinson? But Manu Ginobili and somebody else. Was it Parker? A couple of former basketball players. So you've got like local celebrities. Yeah. You've got local money that is coming into this. Where with this, once I hear that there's a private equity firm,
right,
and they say, well, we don't care where the team is, what city it is, you know, we're just, they're looking at it as an opportunity to turn a business. Profit. And that's all it says to me. And that just, I hate it. I want to dream about the locally owned, you know, bring your family out to the ballpark, and it's affordable and fun, and it's not all about a cash grab for everything.
Right.
But that's the world we live in, I guess.
And that's the way Major League Baseball wants it, because they had, you know, part of the article was like, you need, you know, the email to the guys, like, you need to meet, Rob Manfred wants to meet with you. And, you know, that's what I think Major League Baseball wants, is that private equity, that money, so they can just kind of tighten the noose around minor league baseball and bring in that whole one baseball kind of element. And they dictate if your kid makes the high school team or not, or if he makes the travel ball team.
And so Rob Manfred wants to meet with you. Is that like being called into Vito Corleone's office?
You got a good company here. I think you can do some good business with us. You know it's going to happen.
Yeah, you better kiss the ring.
You're right. All right, so that's all we got for the Minor League Minute.
We'll be back in a minute with the Affiliate Rundown.
right, on to the affiliate rundown. Let's start in Lake E. Painting Corners, Wednesday, left-handed Cuban pitcher Javier Chacon pitched well and got the win. He scattered three hits and surrendered one run in four solid innings. He's battled injuries after being signed by the Padres in 2021. The 21-year-old has an 11.9 K-9 in 67 and two-thirds innings.
Some interesting relievers that the Padres have, especially down in Lake Elsinore. And this is where guys are making a name for themselves. And Isaiah Lowe, he's been in the organization a couple of years, but he's been slowed by injury. Yeah. I haven't seen him in person. Storm tweeted out a picture of him, and he is built. That is a grown man right there. So I'm excited to go see. So he's a starter. They want him to be a starter.
Yeah.
Right now, he's kind of working as an opener because he's limited on his innings. And then Xavier Ruiz is a promising guy. And Bradley Rodriguez, who kind of started to make a name for himself last spring.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm excited to see some of those guys. And, you know, it's A ball. So it's the first time a lot of these guys are being in affiliate ball. There's going to be the guys that pop out. Like, none of them are really names, you know, but as we cover them, as you see more on Twitter, that you'll see these, you know, the cream rises to the top.
Cream will rise to the top.
Pause. I need to plug in my computer.
I'll keep us rolling.
Okay.
All right, moving on to On the Screws. On Wednesday, Dylan Head had his best game of his young career, collecting three hits and four total bases, stealing a bag, and also making a really nice catch in center field.
Yeah.
The Storm have been doing a pretty good job of promoting Dylan Head. The guy's just crazy athletic. So seeing Homer Bush Jr. running down balls, Dylan Head's going to be at that level real quick. And then Jay Beshears is continuing his hot start, reaching base four times. Tuesday, he added another couple doubles. So Head's got speed. Beshears is another Duke product like Pauly. A couple interesting guys that the Storm have.
Yeah, there are some interesting bats there. And Voight doesn't wear batting gloves.
Oh, I always love that.
Yeah.
That old school look. Yeah, Nick Voight. He was slugging last year. He was one of those guys that wasn't posting great numbers, but it was like he was always getting the big hit to drive in the run that they needed. So you always got to have somebody like that.
You know, and that's what you get when Jay Beshears. And look, Dylan, you know, he's still super young. You know, he's not hitting quite yet, but it's early. He's still getting his feet underneath them, and we expect big things out of Dylan Head, certainly.
So are we allowed to say it's still early? I guess with minor league baseball, we are.
Yeah.
Big league baseball. I'm trying not to use that phrase because
we
kept saying that phrase until it was way too late.
Yeah. Well, one thing, and we'll go to batting around here. I had some dental work done, and this past couple of weeks I've had dental work done, and the receptionist lady who does all the charging is a Dodger fan. And Monday morning I had dental work, and I'm like, how was your weekend? She was like, fantastic. And then she complained about how shitty her team is. I'm like, dude, you're the Dodger. You're not complaining if they're not playing good. Like,
Padres win 2 out of 3. You get to go in there, show off those brand new pearly whites. Hey, how about that Dodgers Padres series, huh? Who's That's irrelevant great. Now?
Right. She brought that up. And it's funny. Then she's like, I need about $2,000. I'm like, whoa.
Oh, always getting the upper hand.
So anyways, let's move on to batting around. So some sad news here. Charlies Aquino was released by the Storm roster, ending 5-year tenure in the organization. To fill the roster spot, the club promoted fellow utility man and Storm, I think, alumni Chase Valentine from the ACL. Valentine, 21, played in 38 games for the Storm last year, hitting 161, 261, and 218. He's going to get another chance here now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, some guys, they struggle the first time, then they come back and they figure it out. So give him another chance.
Yeah.
And then you also have here that outfielder Juan Murillo was released from the ACL roster. The 21-year-old hit 303, 366, 477 in two seasons in the Arizona Complex League, but he was unable to make the Storm roster in each of the last two seasons. That tells me that you don't scout the stat line, especially in the ACL. You never know who these guys are facing, and you don't know what the evaluators are looking for out of these guys. So you can go down there and post numbers. Doesn't mean that you're going to hit at the next level. And I mean, so we've seen Buddy Reed was one of our first our first friends of the podcast.
Yeah.
And he absolutely demolished the California League, went on to do pretty well in Fort Wayne. And then once he got to Double A, hit that plateau and just could not figure out Double A hitting. Yeah. So maybe that's what they were seeing in Murillo. But this is that time of year that I checked the transaction log, and there were a bunch of guys that the Padres released. Most of them were Dominican Summer League guys, or, you know, people that hadn't come over to the mainland yet.
Yeah.
But, you know, every year they're always looking for a couple new guys to pick up, and they always have to make room for them.
And the draft is coming right around the corner. So you need, you know, it's one of those things where you see the minor leaguer tweet all the time, like, there's always a guy that's going after your job, and you're competing against your teammate, but in a way you don't, you know, it's more fun than that. There's always someone gaming for your job.
Right. And with the new limitations, you know, since Major League Baseball took over minor league operations, now there's that limit of, I think it's 160 players on domestic rosters.
Most of that. Yeah.
And then I think there are also slightly more limitations on how many players they can have in their Dominican camp. And so they can't have two ACL teams and also a bunch of guys just hanging out at the complex like they used to.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's you know, in the end of the day, that's fair. You never know where talent's going to rise, but certainly there's only so many jobs, and the better hired, that chafe that you can just cut out by not having them in the organization, in organizations, by having only so many players. You're going to boil down that roster by limiting the number of spots. So, all right, let's get on to Fort Wayne.
All right. So painting the corners, Dylan Lesko is still struggling with command. Saturday, he struck out 4 in 3 innings with only one hit, but needed 66 pitches to get there and walked 3. Henry Baez hasn't given up a run yet in the young season. He threw 4 scoreless in the nightcap on Saturday. He has more walks than the strikeouts, 5 walks to 4 strikeouts. He's got a lot of promise with a mid-90s heater and a developing changeup. Lesko, I have a feeling that this year is going to be the year where you see gradual, like, month-to-month kind of changes. Right. It's not going to just click. He's going to struggle, and then you'll see a little bit of improvement as the season goes by. And then I figure we'll probably see a point where he kind of falls off, where the stamina is kind of, you know, the command is back, but then the stamina, you get deep into the season, you got to build that back up.
Yeah, absolutely. And the big step, I think I talked about last episode, is the full season. Like, with the big step, full season. We don't expect him. I don't expect to be lights out of the gate. Wouldn't that be great? Absolutely. Is it expected? Not really. It's really get him on the mound, get some innings underneath him, get some pitches there, and just let it come naturally. No need to rush this guy. We have plenty of guys in Double A we're going to talk about here in a minute. And he's such a high prospect that you want to give him that time to just get it right. And Henry Baez is a name that should be mentioned a lot more. Kid's a beast. Kid's certainly a beast. Had a great season last year.
Well, if he can start striking out more guys than he walks, that would be a good start.
I mean, 5-4, that's a really small sample size, but it's promising. You know, you got to start somewhere.
It is.
All right. So Tyler Robinson on the screws. Tyler Robinson is turning the corner after being hitless in his last 10 at-bats. He had 2 doubles and scored twice Friday. Saturday, he collected 3 more hits with another double and a walk-off RBI after HBJ knocked in the tying run. That was a great game. I watched that on Saturday. Then Sunday, Robinson connected for his first home run. He's 8-for-15. And here's that video right now.
1-1. Fly ball, deep left field, way back, and gone! Wasn't going to get robbed that time. The first of the season for Tyler Robinson makes it a one-run game.
Went down and got it. That pitch down at the knees, and Robertson drives it.
Yeah, Tyler Robertson, he's got that speed-power kind of combination that if he can put it all together, he could be something special. He was a late a late round pick out of college, kind of somebody that they kind of taken a flyer on.
He's a gaucho.
Right, but we kept talking about Sammy Zavala, Homer Bush Jr., yeah. Dylan Head, and Jacob Marcy. But don't forget that Tyler Robertson is right in the middle of that. And it was not this last spring, but the spring before, he was getting a lot of play in those spring training games. So you know that the Padres have a lot of eyes on him.
Yeah, absolutely. I like him. He looks like a ball player. You know, he's just going to – it's the pitch selection. It's what he's swinging at. It's going to make a difference. The defense is there. I saw another good play from him tonight, sliding catch. I'm a big Tyler Robertson fan. Had him on the podcast. I literally talked to him, and in that game, he hurt himself last year. And I think he's out for almost a full year. I think he might have gotten in the very last few weeks of the season. There's some negative podcast mojo.
Okay, so I haven't been watching the Tin Caps super close. Where have they been playing him? Because I know Homer Bush Jr. has been in center field pretty much 100% of the time.
Oh, he's in left.
Okay.
Yeah. So they're also going to finish out on the screws. Griffin Dorsching hit his first homer of the season and had a double. He's hitting really well. You know, he's,
yes.
Yeah. Big donkey there is hitting well. He's a little old for high A, but, you know, with DH being in position, I think if he continues to develop, that we can have ourselves a Donkey Kong in the major leagues one day.
Oh, I'd love to see it. I'd love to see it.
Hell yeah.
All right, so finally batting around, some fun stuff here. John Nolan does a really good job at digging up Tin Caps history and some odd statistical stuff from time to time. So he tweeted this week, the Tin Caps had home games on consecutive days postponed for the first time since May 30th and 31st, 2006. Fort Wayne's catcher Ethan Salas was born June 1st, 2006. So the last time they had back-to-back rainouts was before Ethan Salas was born.
Dude.
Well, oh, my gosh.
It's Indiana, too. That you would think there have been more rainouts there. It's not like the South.
But the thing with Indiana weather, it's like it comes and then it changes. Like you get the thunderstorms that roll through and you get dumped on for 45 minutes and then it's gone. And then it's blue skies. And as soon as they can roll the tarp off the field, they're playing the game. So I got to imagine there were a lot of games that were like that, like interruptions, and they just kind of make their way through the game. But this was just, they just got absolutely pounded for 2 days. And I feel bad because it was their opening week and they want to put on a show. They've been getting ready for this. They're celebrating their 15th anniversary being the Tin Caps. And you have the new playing surface. They've got the new stairway up outside and all this. Yeah. They want to show off for the new fans. And they got to wait.
Mother Nature, old man yells at cloud. Okay, moving on, though. Check this out. This is another fun little factoid. The first game in Fort Wayne's franchise history was April 10th, 1993, on the road against the Waterloo Diamonds, then a Padres affiliate. Waterloo's starting second baseman was Homer Bush Sr., who went on for the the Midwest League All-Star that year.
It's a family affair. So the Tin Caps rank second in the Midwest League with 15 stolen bases and 16 tries. Individually, Homer Bush Jr. is tied for the league lead with 5. So what I like about that isn't just that they're racking up the stolen bases. It's that they've been successful 15 out of 16 tries. So they're being smart about it.
Yeah. They've been coached and developing well. And that's all the coaching right there.
It is. But I love the family stuff.
Yeah.
I love when you can tie that kind of thing back around.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so let's move on to San Antonio. So painting the corners, Adam Mazur continues to dominate in the early stages of the season, tossing 6 scoreless innings. He induced a lot of weak contact and had 9 groundouts, only gave up 3 hits and had 4 strikeouts. So his performance drew the attention of the guys at Baseball America. They put him on their hot sheet where they ranked the 20 hottest MLB prospects. They had this to say. Mazur had a strong run at AA to end 2023 and has pitched well in his first 2 starts to begin the season with San Antonio. Mazur's outing last Thursday was a model in efficiency as he needed only 53 total pitches to get through 6 innings, landing 75% of his pitches for strikes. Mazur blended a four-seam fastball at 94 to 96, a high 80s cutter, a low 80s curveball, and a changeup. The right-hander shows the ability to move the ball around the zone and miss bats with his fastball and curveball. Now, I believe that was at least one of those games was at Amarillo, and we were kind of questioning how hot their gun might be.
Right.
But still, what I wanted to pull out of that was the efficiency. 53 total pitches to get through 6 innings, and throwing strikes 75% of the time. One thing I've heard about the Padres organization is that pitchers that throw strikes move fast. Yeah. Like if you show that your stuff can miss bats and you fill the zone up with strikes, you will move. They don't have a whole lot of patience for guys that struggle to find the zone and wind up walking the lot. They want guys that are going to attack hitters and let the defense pick them up.
Look, I've seen both those starts, and I got the second one a little late. But folks, you guys got to see this kid. Look, find out when he's pitching. Go to the MLB TV. If you have Padres TV, you get MLB TV, whether you get there or you go to MILB, log in, watch the game. He's absolute must-see watch. And then you got everything else that's, the whole lineup that we're going to talk about here in a minute is fun to watch as well. But he is absolutely, he was the Robbie, like last year, he had a really good season last year. Robbie Stallings was the big man because he was so young and he was doing so well. This year, Mazur has just taken that, took it to another level. And it's just pounding the zone. And you saw, I think I tweeted out in that game, they're starting to swing early. They were starting to swing early because they didn't want to see any of the off-speed stuff. So he was getting weak contact in, after the second or third pitch, and guys were just grounding out softly. And that's how he's able to be so efficient.
Well, and if they find out a pattern that he's going to start you off with a strike. He's not going to be trying to paint an edge. He's going to come right down the middle and attack you. Then as a hitter, you're going to go up there and try to be aggressive. And so then he's going to put a little wrinkle on it, get you out on your front foot, and boom, quick out. So yeah, lots of really good pitching in Double A, as we knew was going to be the case. Yeah. But they're all kind of getting off to a good start. So Woosuk Go pitched a clean ninth inning, keeping it tied, but things fall apart for him in the 10th inning. He went double, that scored the Manfred runner, wild pitch, RBI single flyout lineup. But so he got his first loss as a pro on U.S. soil, but the clean ninth inning is a building block. I think he's a bit of a project, but they wouldn't sign him if they didn't believe that he's got the stuff to wind up playing at the major league level. And so then the next night, Robbie Snelling put together a solid outing, striking out six batters in five innings of work, stingy with hits, with three and runs, only giving up one. And then Victor Lizarraga made his Double-A debut on Sunday. 20-year-old retired six of the seven batters he faced in two scoreless innings. He allowed one walk while striking out two batters. Finally, Ryan Burgert racked up eight punches as the Mission's pitching staff paddled 18 on Saturday. Reggie Lawson had two. Jason Blanchard had five. Javian Sandridge had three. We're going to see guys hold straight out of Double-A up to the major league level.
Yeah.
When they start looking to the minors to start to supplement the big league roster, you've got guys in Triple-A that have a little bit more experience, but guys like Burgert, Lizarraga, they're going to get the call. And then Javian Sandridge, I thought he had a chance, and they brought him to Korea.
Right.
And so I thought he might have had a chance to make the opening day roster. And then Jason Blanchard, he's been in the organization a long time, and the guy just keeps performing as a reliever. Yeah. So you never know. I feel like sometimes organizations will kind of turn and burn a guy where they'll bring him up, use him for a couple of games, then designate him for assignment, which kind of stinks. But the bright side is they get to count their name on him as a major league player. They're one of those, 20,000 people that can say that they were a major league player. So I look at Jason Blanchard, maybe he could be somebody like that, that when they're in a pinch, they need to bring somebody up. Maybe he gets a call.
Yeah, absolutely. Moving on the screws, with the offense struggling this week, there was a silver lining in this touch of gray. Nathan Mortarella is hot. Two song references, one paragraph. With two hits Sunday through 41 plate appearances, he's now hitting .452, .561, .613. I'd watch the game tonight. I know he's hitting .412. I don't think he got a hit tonight, but he's still hitting .412, and that's on a Tuesday, on a Wednesday.
Ridiculous for a guy with a power hitter kind of profile.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we also have a pretty good guess of which Mad Friars writer wrote that paragraph.
Well, no, that's all me.
That was all you?
That's all me. What inspired me was Mark Wilkins from Mad Friars when he wrote in a Modesta was not that great. It's a Hold Steady song lyric from Craig Finn from the Hold Steady.
Wow, that's a deep cut right there.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, like, there's a, because really that this last week, besides tonight, even tonight, there was no offense for the Missions. They scored 2 runs. They scored 3 runs. Like, there was nothing, and they lost most of those games. So there wasn't a lot to talk about with in on the Screws. So, you know, Nathan Mortimer is the hot guy, so I had to bring it in. Had to bring it in the hot.
All right. Okay, so batting around. As of Saturday, Missions hitters have been plunked 11 times. Their 11 hit-by-pitches ranks third across minor league baseball. Only El Paso with 18 and Las Vegas with 13 have been hit by more pitches. And I had to throw this in here. El Paso's Tim LaCastro was responsible for 7 of them. The guy is just an absolute baseball magnet. It's unreal. Martorella reached base safely in all 8 games this season. And on Saturday, the Missions won on a walk-off wild pitch. Here's the call.
Ken Hollis off thirds, Rexall first. Wallace is ready. 1-2 delivery.
It gets away to the left of the catcher. Tries to throw to the plate. Not in time, and the ball game is over. The pitch was down and to the left of Tresh. It bounced about 5 feet away from him, and the runner from third, Hollis, is alert, and he raced to the plate, and Tresh pounced on the ball. Fired on the walls, covering the throw, done in time, and the Missions win it 4-3.
That was cool. I tweeted that out, and I watched that game, and it was insane how fun. But let's move on to El Paso.
You know, that's the kind of wild thing that happens in a minor league game that you don't see very often at a big league game, but it's the exciting, crazy, wacky stuff that happens in minor league baseball.
Almost better like a walk-off balk.
Yeah. Well, I mean, a walk-off balk, it's just, nope, that doesn't leave a good feeling in your mouth. It's like, usually, like, somebody, like, their knee twitches and they get flagged for it. And everybody's kind of looking around like, what just happened? Where the walk-off wild pitch, I mean, everybody sees it. And it's that exciting, you know, everybody's scrambling around trying to get the ball thrown in. He's going to get the tag down. The umpire, is going to call him safe? Yes!
And the crowd goes crazy.
Yes.
Absolutely. All right, so let's get out of here. Painting the corners. It was it was chilly in the future of the Athletics' future home. It was 40 degrees in Sacramento, and Randy Vasquez struggled in it. He walked 3 and hit 2 batters and has allowed 10 earned runs and 11 and a third innings on the season with 13 strikeouts against 4 walks. Silver lining, touch of gray. Remember, he came over in the Juan Soto trade, so you know, it's one of those things where let's hope he does not turn into a Jay Groom, but it certainly is the Pacific Coast League, and it can get into your head.
Right. Him and Brito were kind of opposite sides of the coin, where Brito has the nasty stuff and not the best command. Vasquez is supposed to be more of a command specialist, where his stuff doesn't miss bats quite as easily. And so you get somebody like that in a league where you get thin air and a breaking ball doesn't break nearly as much. That's where, you know, all of a sudden their neck gets sore from looking back over the fence.
Yeah. All right. On a bright note, Lake Bacher struck out 4 batters in a scoreless 2-inning relief outing. He has allowed 1 earned run across 9 innings in 5 appearances, striking out 9. I was surprised that he got that early minor league invite to spring training, and I could have swore they were going to give him a chance. And he had a really good spring as well. Seeing him get optioned to AAA, to the minor league camp, was a little disheartening, but he is back on the radar. He is certainly pushing for it. I saw Kevin Charity from Mad Friars tweeted, like, here's my, you know, get behind Lake Bacher tweet. That's a guy who's been in the organization for a very long time and has certainly earned at least a cup of coffee in the major leagues.
He is. And I had a chance to chat with him briefly. I think it was a year ago at spring training, and just the nicest guy.
Yeah.
And so, you know, on a personal level, somebody that you hope to see you do well, just because you know that he's a good dude, like Tom Cosgrove. We've gotten to know Tom Cosgrove. We were just excited that he had a chance to come up and make it. And now look at him. He's a mainstay in the bullpen.
Yeah.
So who knows, you know, maybe Lake Bacher will finally get that opportunity.
Absolutely.
All right, so then on the Screws, Graham Pauly was optioned to AAA to get more playing time and consistent at-bats. It didn't take long for him to make the most of it. On Thursday, in just his 4th at-bat for El Paso, he hit his first AAA home run. It was a grand slam, and he added a 2-run shot in the 6th. The slam had an exit velocity of 100.6 miles an hour and went 385 feet. The second left the yard at 99 miles an hour. That's pretty consistent, and went 368 feet. After a pair of singles on Sunday, he's now hit in 4 of 5 games since getting sent down from the big league club to get regular action. The 23-year-old was in left field for the second time and has logged starts at both third base and right field. So his arm at third base didn't look the greatest. Yeah, I guess when you're used to seeing Manny Machado over there, and Tyler Wade has a pretty good arm at third base, and Eddie Rosario surprised me. He's got a cannon. He's got more of an arm than I thought he did. And so when you see that, and then you see Graham Pauly make that same kind of play, move it in and got to throw hard, the ball doesn't quite have the same zip on it. Curious what they see when they put him in right field, how his arm plays out there.
Yeah, and this is a very big – all those outfields in AAA are massive outfields.
Yeah, well, it's got to be when you're playing on the moon and the ball takes off and just – it's like they're playing in less gravity. There's no air.
Yeah, I saw him hit a ball this weekend, and he absolutely crushed this thing, and it was a fly ball to the outfield. Like, and I've seen balls hit off that dog pounder of the mayor's office there in right field, but he just absolutely smoked one, and you're like, oh, that's gonna go, and it died.
It must have been when the wind was doing something different. But so the launch velocities on these 100.6 miles an hour and 99 miles an hour, those aren't necessarily eye popping numbers.
Right.
So I guess you look at it like, yes, grand slam, 2-run homer, he's hitting home runs. But then I guess the flip side of that is if this was in a major league ballpark,
it's an out.
A, does he get that same kind of velocity off a major league pitcher? Right. But B, that probably doesn't make it out in most big league ballparks.
Yeah. Yeah,
if it's not to be the touch of gray.
Yes. All right. Clay Dungan continues to impress. The 28-year-old was picked in the minor league Rule 5 draft, went 1-for-2 with 2 walks and RBI. Dungan has at least 1 hit in 12 of the 13 games this season, and his 22 RBIs are second most in the Pacific. Dude, 22 RBIs, it's been like 2 weeks of baseball. Holy cow.
Right. Well, he had that one game where he had 2 home runs.
Right.
And that had everybody kind of talking about him. But you look back at his history, and he's not a power guy. He's an on-base guy. And so now what you're seeing, he's spraying the ball all over the place. He's drawn some walks. And the RBIs are just a product of who's already on base when he comes up. So if they've got ducks on the pond and he hits a little duck snort over the second baseman, there come the ribbies.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so finally, batting around, El Paso dropped their 5th consecutive game in Sacramento on Sunday, getting shut out for the first time since the 2022 season. That's shut out for the series. They got a series sweep. And, you know, it's one thing to get a series sweep in the majors when it's a 3-game series. It's another thing when it's a whole week-long series in the minors. And then starter Nolan Watson got a visit from the trainer after just one batter. While he stayed in the game, he didn't return for the second inning. You know, so they have a sponsor that is, I think, is it Truly Nolan that sponsors their like player of the week award that the Chihuahuas give out?
I'm not sure, but yeah.
The word Nolan is in the company's name, and I'm waiting for Nolan Watson to get that award.
Right.
it seems fitting. Okay. But since we're talking about Sacramento, how about this news that the A's intend to play in the Rivercats AAA ballpark starting in 2025? Have you read much into this?
Other than it's absolute dog pile of steaming manure. Decision.
I don't know.
For the players, man. For the organization, for Major League Baseball. I mean, this is where the kind of collusion in Major League Baseball ownership goes. You have the absolute worst owner, and they don't care, because eventually they're all going to make money. They're all making money. And you have a storied franchise. The A's go back to, I think they're one of the very first major league teams back when they were in Philadelphia back in the 1800s.
Right. So on that note, moving has been a part of their history, because they were in Philadelphia, then they were in Kansas City, and now they're in Oakland. So they're not a team that is nailed down to one location. So I kind of get that you can argue that side, that they've kind of been a nomad throughout their history. But the way that they've turned their backs on the people of Oakland, the way that John Fisher has pretty much done the same thing that we saw Dean Spanos do here in San Diego, about just letting the product on the field go downhill and being a jerk to the season ticket holders and to the fans, raising ticket prices while the product on the field goes down.
Or Mark Kotze. You know, Jenny Kavnar is now the play-by-play person who's fantastic and we love. Okay, here it is again. Silver lining. That used to be a AAA ball club. It used to be a AAA ball field. So the AAA stadium is still pretty significantly low. And what I've read about it is they need to do significant improvements to just the structure of where the major league players are going to be.
And you're talking about Rayleigh Field or Sacramento's ballpark, right?
Yeah.
Right. So the first thing, their clubhouse is beyond the left field wall. There's no access from the dugout. Players have to walk across the field to go to the clubhouse.
What is this, 1950? This is not,
Yeah, that ain't going to fly. Yeah. Their weight room, the batting cages, and then the things that Major League Baseball has added as requirements with the umpire locker rooms, space for female staff, space for families, there need to be family accommodations. And then just the media space, you're going to have multiple broadcast teams. So like the Padres, you've got Spanish language, English language home, you got the away, you got radio and TV, and you need to have room for all of that. You also need to have room for the video, the video production
absolutely
people. And I've been in the press box it was Rayleigh Field at the time, and the broadcasters have this little glass booth that's kind of walled off. But it's just the two of them. Johnny Doskow was the guy's name. I think he's still there. But it's a minor league stadium. Yeah. It's not a major league stadium. And I don't see them being able to just dump a bunch of money into it and make these crazy renovations in the next 365 days to have it ready for Major League Baseball next year.
For several years. It's not just 1 year, right? It's till 2028, 25.
Yeah. At least through 6 and 7.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then there's also the lights and the playing, the playing surface, all of that needs to be brought up to major league standards. This isn't like when COVID happened and the Blue Jays were playing at Buffalo
for
that, that was kind of a workaround, and it kind of made sense because there weren't fans and they could take advantage of other spaces because there's nobody else there.
Right.
But you can't do that when you're trying to put on a major league product. I guess the flip side of that argument is that the A's have been reporting a ticket sold of like 3,800 tickets, which means that there's probably 1,500 butts in seats at those games.
Yeah.
But you can't make that argument. If he hadn't been treating the fans of the Oakland A's like absolute dog doo-doo, they would still be coming out.
Absolutely.
It's 5 years ago, they were filling that place up. They had the guys with the drums, and there's a vibrant, very, very enthusiastic fan base in Oakland, and they've all just been given the middle finger, and they're showing their displeasure by boycotting the A's pretty much.
Yeah. And they
I hope they do that game again this year where they pack the place and just chant sell the team the whole freaking time. I hope they do another one of those games this year.
I know they boycotted it and had more people, like three times as many people in the parking lot than they had in the stadium. It's Major League Baseball, and he is trying to shoehorn himself into Las Vegas. Like, even if it's a bad gaffe from the mayor saying, they need to figure it out in Oakland, saying something to that effect, where she had to come back and say, this is what I really meant. It's just an incredibly bad look. And if the shoe doesn't, if the shoe doesn't fit, you got to quit. And I'm not saying stay in Oakland. I'm take them somewhere else. If they're not going to fit in Vegas, unfortunately they're going to have to go somewhere else because the city of Oakland isn't working with them. It's a storied franchise that has moved a lot, and it's sad, and it really is embarrassing. And it's a black eye on Rob Manfred because he's letting this shit happen.
Is but it's Rob and it's the other owners. And credit to Peter Seidler that he was holding out that vote to allow them to move. He was one of there were a few dissenting voices, and it sounds like he was kind of the leader of that pack,
right,
of saying no, let's hold out, we can't let them do this. And then as soon as Peter was no longer the deciding voice for the Padres, then the vote happened and it passed. So
All right, well, hey, that's it. You can find me on Twitter at SD Donovan.
Oh, I'm at Zippy underscore TMS. Man, I'm sorry to end it on a down note, man.
Downer.
Let's bring it back. Let's go Padres. Let's go Missions. Let's go Chihuahuas. Let's go Storm. I'm excited to get up there this weekend. I hope we make that trip off on Saturday.
We will.